Get promos and discounts from Filipino startups. Check out our partners at the description.
Wolf is a developer of many projects in the Hive blockchain. Among them are Splinter Royale and PM, a private messaging app for Hive. Hello, Wolf. Welcome to the Startup Podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Yes, I'm very grateful actually to have you here. So we got connected through Chris Rice, and Chris mentioned that you're one of his favorite developers in Hive. So yeah, and here in the conversation, I actually want to know like these projects that you have done and your history, your experience in Hive. So can we know about the projects that you have done so far in the Hive, Wolf?
Yeah, so I guess the projects I've done were mainly developer focused. So I've done a lot of developer centric projects. But when I first joined Steam or Hive, it was first called Steam. I've been working on, like, I was training myself to code, and the projects I came up with were just things I wanted to work on. And one thing you mentioned was the PM, or previously it was called Steam Chat. And the idea was to create messaging on the blockchain. So when you were doing a transfer, you could set a memo and you could encrypt it. And on Hive or Steam, there's like the idea of just sharing messages via transfer because it's decentralized. Yeah, so I worked on that. And it seems that Chris used part of that and created another project, which is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in DBuzz, I think they use PM. So it's actually nice that you develop these tools, and a lot of people, or a lot of founders, a lot of creators, other creators in the Hive blockchain can use these tools that you have done in the past. So that's actually what I like best about the Hive blockchain, about Web3, sort of. I mean, different founders, different creators can make their products, can make their tools, and they can actually share this for others to use and for the whole community to benefit. But yeah, let's talk more about that, like the Web3 community, about Hive. But let's go first to one other project that you're currently working on right now, or you've been working on recently, Splinter Royale. So can you know more about this?
Yeah, sure. So Splinter Royale is a game that is currently consisting of an auto chess battler, and is also reusing some of the cards from Splinterlands. So it's a cooperation between our own cards and ideas, and building on top of another Web3 game.
Yeah. Yeah. Can we know again about on like how this works? I mean, can you just share a bit of a picture on how people can play Splinter Royale so that our listeners can appreciate this?
Yes, of course. So the game is very simple. Basically, you're getting three random cards at the beginning of a game, and you need to decide which card to buy. And each card costs 3 gold. And when you buy it, you need to play it, and then you're going to be matched up with an opponent. And whoever wins, and then you can win or lose or draw. And your goal is to increase your board by buying more cards and combining three of the same to a gold card. And the cool thing about this is that the base game is, like I said before, is reusing parts of the Splinterlands cards. So if you're a Splinterlands player, you will know the cards. And I try to make sure that the new abilities, for example, there are cards that have melee attack, there are cards that have magic attack, and I try to be as close to the original as possible, but not all rules are, of course, applicable to the new game format.
Yeah, I kind of see the analogy. I'm pretty sure you know this. So I'm pretty sure you know Clash of Clans, and I remember game, Clash Royale. So I think it's kind of similar on how you like extended the game. So from Splinterlands, you created like a game that's still rooted from the original game, but it's like a different mechanic. It's like a different game altogether. So I think the use of the Royale term, it's more of like a Battle Royale system or a Battle Royale game mechanic changing from the previous one. But yeah, let's also talk about that. It's also very interesting because Splinterlands is actually one of the most famous Web3 games in Hive, or probably the most famous. And you also worked at Splinterlands before. So can you share about working as a game developer in general in Hive? Can you share some of the experiences when you were working at Splinterlands? So can we know more about the Hive gaming community?
Yeah, sure. So what I like about Hive in regards to gaming is that it is very much open. So for example, when you work with Ethereum or EVM chains, then you've got these very strict rules of like the code you can use. You have to write smart contracts and they need to be audited. But on Hive, much of the stuff, much of the code can be self-conscious. So, which means you have a lot of freedom to create the game logic as you want, and then you can utilize the blockchain where you need it. For example, with Splinter Royale or Splinterlands, you can buy packs and then you can open them. With Splinter Royale, that is still coming in the next 1 to 1 or 2 months. But the idea is that when you open them, there's a transparency that we are not rigging it. And for that, we're using the blockchain. And that's a cool thing that when I tried to see if I could replicate some of the logic on Ethereum or Arbitrum, that wasn't really possible without using an Oracle, because the block hash that is being used to generate the random outcome of a pack is, when I have a smart contract and I try to get that block hash, another smart contract can get the same one in the same block. So it can check, okay, get a good card. If yes, proceed the same transaction. If not, abort it. And on Hive, since I'm getting the blocks after they're processed, I can make sure that no one else has access to the block hash before I do. So after the person already opened the packs, I get the block hash of that transaction and I can make sure to generate the correct outcome out of it. I hope that makes sense on a technical level.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, that's very technical even for me. Yes. But yeah, I get the concept. I get the logic and it's also amazing to hear that these different blockchain systems, for example, Hive, Ethereum, there are actual differences in how they work specifically with the smart contracts work that you can only make some of this stuff in certain blockchains. So it's very interesting to hear that. Can I ask about the gaming community? I mean, have you had experience dealing with gamers? I mean, the people who actually play these games. I mean, what are their feedbacks with these games on Hive? What's their experience? What's the experience of people playing these games?
So the gamers on Hive, I think they're very unique in the sense that maybe let's say traditional gamers, they're more focusing on the quote unquote fun aspects of the game. But gamers on Hive, because in some sense they're crypto natives, they want to be part of the game. So they want to direct the future of the game with governance tokens, and they want to be more deeply involved. So they want to play. For example, in Splinter Royale, I've got a bunch of people who are passionate, really, really passionate gamers, but they're also interested in getting more involved and trying to build out the game better rather than just, okay, I'm just a consumer and I'm just going to play, as it's most of the time in Web 2.
Yeah, and wow, I mean, that's really Web 3. I mean, that's the whole essence of Web 3. I mean, when the community, when the players actually have a say through these governance tokens, through their governance tokens, through the governance mechanisms on how the game will develop in the future. Because it's actually correct. When we come to think of it, there are some Web3 games that are actually sort of Web2 games because the people, the players, just play them for the rewards, for the possible money that they can earn, possibly for the fun, but they don't actually partake in its Web3 aspect. But hearing this, it's actually nice that these games, there are developers, but on how these games are developed are actually somehow also voted on or shaped by the community. So what do you think of that? I mean, what do you think of that aspect in comparison with other Web3 games?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're making very good points in regards to when we're talking about Web3 games, not every Web3 game is the same. For example, we have games like Axie Infinity that attracted a lot of players, and a lot of players were just in there to extract money. So when the token price dropped because there was infinite inflation, people left. But there are still a core group of players who support the game. And I think, going back to your question, the way that Splinterlands has done it, it has created a very strong group of players who are interested in the game and want to support us spiritually, finance, and etc. Yeah,
actually, that's a very important topic, like the tokenomics or like the economics of the game. Even before, like even before Web3, I remember some Web2 games. These are very Web2 games. Like, for example, if you're familiar with, for example, this is just an example. Maybe other people can know, I mean, can relate to this. Neopets.com, for example. I mean, those Web2 games, they're very old. They're very traditional in the sense that there's just a group of developers creating the game and creating all in its background. And the players can actually, I mean, do not have a say. And those games actually had a problem with like currency inflation. I mean, the currency in the game. And it seemed to some players, including me, that, hey, these creators don't care about us. So, okay, I'm going to stop playing. So it's actually very important even for players if the developers or the creators care for them, such that if the players want this to happen, want this economics to happen, the creators can like follow through. But anyway, enough with the gaming scene. So let's talk about Hive in general. How did you get into the Hive blockchain in general? I mean, how did you know about Hive or before Steam in general before? So how did you come into working as a developer for the Hive blockchain?
So that's actually a fun story. The real story is that I was following a guy on Facebook who is known now as Stephen Lupkar. He's working at Swan, but at the time I was following him on Facebook about other stuff, and he was always posting about Bitcoin. And at some point in 2017, I was like, okay, I gotta check this out because I heard of Bitcoin before, but I never really got into it too deep. And then a few weeks later or a few days later, I don't remember, I found out about Steemit and Steam. And then I started blogging, and then I started learning to code, and then I started developing projects, and then like it was very slowly, but there was no plan. So a lot of this stuff I was working on, I was just looking at what I want to do, what I think would fit into its zeitgeist. But what's interesting is that over the time, what was previously Steam has changed a lot. So, So before it was Steam and it was centralized, and now it's Hive and it's completely decentralized.
Yeah, it's actually, I mean, I've just heard the stories from the other Hive founders that I interviewed here. I want to ask later about that, but can I just ask, so you just learned programming software development when you were exposed to the blockchain community, when you were exposed to Steemit or to Hive. Is that right?
Yeah. So I learned, I knew a bit of programming before, but I never really got too deep into it. So kind of the blockchain was my gateway to finding projects that kept me around to learn, because I think that's a difficult part in learning to program, is to find something that you're going to stick to. And yeah, somehow Steam or Hive did it for me.
It's actually your motivation.
Yes.
Motivation to learn and to keep on building, to keep on doing these projects. So how was it? How was it during like those years back then? I mean, I actually just learned about Hive very recently, and I'm pretty sure many people or many of our listeners just learned about Hive just recently. So can you just share about like those days back then? How was it? And you also became a Hive witness. So how was these days? How was these experiences?
So in the beginning of Hive or Steam, I mean, a lot of things were different because there was still the net and Dan around, the founders. Or when I joined, Dan was already gone, but Net was still there. And there was a centralized company in front of it. But yeah, I joined, and then I started building a project which was called Smart Steam. And that got popular really quick. But it was also kind of controversial because it was providing a service which was leveraging a feature of the blockchain, which some thought it shouldn't be done, like buying votes, or like there was a question, should people buy votes? But that was kind of my first project where I learned to code. And then in the start of 2018, I wanted to learn more about becoming a witness, and I started my campaign. So I also built a lot of projects, a lot of tools in that time for witnesses. And yeah, and I became a witness. So maybe I can talk a bit more about what a witness is, or?
Yeah, sure, sure.
Okay, so basically a witness is what you would call a validator on other blockchains. On BTC, there are the miners. On Solana, they're the validators. On BSC, they're the validators. So basically, they're the people who are running servers who are part of the governance system. So that is important to make sure that everything that is going on is secure and your funds are secure. And the cool thing about Hive is that it is like completely decentralized. So in the beginning, there was a NinjaMind stake. And the way it worked was the company who founded it created a bunch of tokens for themselves. And when Hive was created, the community decided to just burn those tokens. Or actually, they were put into the DHF, so the proposal, if I remember correctly, in the proposal fund. So which means that the blockchain is one of the only ones that is like completely decentralized, no VCs, no ninja minds. Yeah.
Yeah, it actually makes a lot of sense. I mean, I've been hearing this from these Hive founders that I've interviewed, that Hive is probably the most genuine Web3 blockchain, probably the only real Web3, maybe. I mean, or one of the most real Web3. So yeah, sharing this history, it actually gives some background on how this happened. But can I also hear your thoughts on that? I mean, what do you think actually ensures up to now that Hive is still very decentralized and is still very Web3? I mean, because like, for example, other blockchains, they're Web3, of course, but like on the decentralization aspect, there's some issues about that. Mm-hmm. But in Hive, it's really like one of the priorities of the community. Like the people really want to ensure like that blockchain remains to be as decentralized as possible. So what do you think about this?
So decentralization, of course, is a scale. So there's not like, I can't say, okay, this project is decentralized and this isn't. So some are more, some are less. For example, blockchains like Solana, they're decentralized, but probably not as much as Hive. And is Hive as decentralized as Bitcoin? Maybe not. But it's in that it's more towards Bitcoin than Solana. So the community isn't really deciding; it's just part of the code. So which means we don't have to decide at one day. Okay, we are going to be decentralized since the code is law in this case. We could introduce a hard fork, which makes it more centralized, but that would, at this point, it is so decentralized that it is probably always going to fail. And one of the reasons why what shows that Hive is a decentralized is that no central authority can decide to do anything. So if you have been part, maybe if you have been looking at how Hive has a MetaMost, so that is similar like a Slack channel. And that is where we are like discussing things we want to work on. But a lot of that stuff is sometimes a bit chaotic, but that is also because it is decentralized. So one person has an idea and he really wants to push that idea. Another person says, no, I don't like that idea. Then they can continue to argue or they can create a proposal, but there's nobody can say, I'm going to force this. He always has to go through the community. So in that sense, it is very decentralized.
Yeah, that's also what I like best about Hive. And it's very interesting. I mean, for other blockchains or like for other companies in general, when you want to create something, like for example, you're someone on the lower levels or you want to propose something, you want to implement something, it has to go through a ladder, through a hierarchy up to the topmost centralized entity who will confirm, who will agree on your proposal or not. What I like about Hive is that it's the community actually who decides on which projects and which proposals will get to be developed and will get to be funded. Speaking about this, can you share your story on how you work as a developer? How do you propose your ideas? How do you get your projects funded? And yeah, how is the life of being a developer that actually builds and actually gets compensated in Hive?
Yeah, so I think there are three ways how someone can get compensated at developing on Hive. So the first thing is they can just post about it. So by by posting about it on Hive, people can vote on it and then you get rewards for it. The second way is they can create proposals. For that, they need to pay a small fee. I think it was $10 worth of, $10 Hive dollars. They need to pay to create the proposal and then people can vote for it or not. That is usually more difficult than writing posts because they need to reach a certain threshold. So they need to, it is a bit political. So you need to ask people and then you need to like show them why that is a good idea. And for example, people like Chris Rice, who has been in this community for many years, like he has a good standing and that's why the proposal also succeeded for Dbus. So it is not that easy. And then the third way that I'm going, that is like being a witness and providing that service. And then also, for example, the projects I'm doing, for example, I'm still maintaining, I've coded the Hive.io website, or I'm maintaining some tools for witnesses. Those I'm not creating proposals for, but they're kind of being paid by me being a witness. So there are these incentives.
Oh, I see. That's interesting. Can we know like the other projects that you have done, that you have developed, that you have built over the years? So we've talked about two PM, which is a bit old already, and Splinter Rail. So can we know some of the projects that you've worked on?
Yeah. So like in the beginning, I worked on Smart Steam, but that was from 2018 to 2020, I think. And then in 2020, I worked on a social, on something called Ingi, which was a social media platform that the idea was that I wanted to create a social media platform where the posting is limited. So you were only able to post like one or two times a day. But at some point I realized that I like social media, but I don't like it so much that I want to work on it every day. Like I like working on it, but if you look at my profile on Twitter, I don't post every day. It's like I'm not the guy who posts every day. So someone who develops a social media platform should be able to post actually every day.
True.
And yeah, and that's when I realized, okay, maybe I'm going to switch to a game, because that's also what I wanted to do my whole time. When CryptoKitties came out, I remember that I had the idea, okay, maybe I can do something with dogs. But at that time, I wasn't good enough as a developer, so I didn't do it. And then in 2020, I wanted to do a game, but AI wasn't around. So I had no way to like create assets. Now I have my wife who is creating beautiful assets, but at that time, and then I created Ingi. So that was the progress. A lot of projects along the way. And over the time, I became much, much better as a developer. Yeah.
And by the way, how do you learn? I mean, you mentioned that when you started, you're actually not that proficient in blockchain development. So how do you learn? I mean, do you self-study this, or do you have some materials, or do you have something you look at that where you learn, or you just learn on the go? You just learn on the process. Mm.
So I recently also looked into EVM development. And one thing I always realize again is that what you think of how difficult it is going to be is far too high, because a lot of things are just getting in there and figuring it out, just testing it out. So for example, if you want to learn EVM coding, just get a tutorial and push a token contract to the testnet and then see how that works. And in regards to Hive, I think the best thing you can do is take an open source project, copy it, run it locally, and then add some things, like change some things around.
Oh.
So that's also how I learned myself to code. So I wanted to build a voting bot. So I took some, I copied, like took one that was open source, I modified it, and that's how I learned. I think that's the best way.
Oh yeah, that's very nice to hear. It actually reminds me of like the Stack Overflow community. I mean, people just share their codes, people just teach you how to do this and that, and then you actually learn by getting those codes and like manipulating them yourself such that your code works. And you brought about a very important topic, open source development. So can we know your thoughts on this philosophy in general? I mean, I've been asking this in the previous Hive founders that I've interviewed. Like, I asked them about what do they think about open source projects, closed source projects. Some say there are like pros and cons for each. So can I ask, I mean, what do you think of open source development in general in contrast with like closed source development?
So in general, I like it a lot. But I think it needs to be, there's a reason to do it and there are reasons not to do it. For example, the projects I'm working on, for example, Splinter Royale, they're not open source, because if I would open source them, somebody might just come in there and fork it, and I have a competitor that that didn't have to create much work for it. But in general, open source is really great because it removes the ability for people to just take code offline and then it's gone forever. So it is very transparent and fair, and that is very crucial for blockchains, because or for smart contracts, for example. At some point when Sprinter Royale, so the goal is for it to become completely decentralized. So there are other games that are already on chain, but so far it is closed source, but the goal is to be it open source, whether it's their own validator system or whether it's on smart contracts. But at that point, it needs to be open source, because if people are supposed to run it, it needs to be open source. So there are use cases where I wouldn't put it open source, maybe never, maybe at some point, but especially when it's projects that, for example, are funded via Hive, to make sure that people in the community have access to it, they should be open source.
Yeah, those are actually good points. And I have two questions from that. Mm-hmm. First, what do you think about the Hive community in general? Like the other founders, the other creators, the other devs? Because I hear that the Hive community is very friendly, very cooperative, very, very helpful to each other. So can I know your thoughts on the Hive community in general?
Yes. So for me, the Hive community is a bit like a family. So every year there's this Hive Fest that is being organized by in the past, often by Roland. Last year it was in Mexico, and this year I don't know where it's going to be, but whenever I'm on there, the last time I was on there, it was in Amsterdam. When you see the people face to face, you get a different impression. For example, in the past, there were like people I had like stress with or like confrontations with on the blockchain. And then I'm like, oh, you're whoever I had conflict with. So it's like, in that sense, it's a family where, of course, you have your conflicts, but the bonds are much, much stronger. But of course, there are also, like in every family, there are those that you get along with very good. And then there are those that you just have problems with, but that's normal.
Yeah, and this is actually a very important concept in blockchain as a whole, because I believe that blockchain is not just a technology. It's not just a simple thing. I mean, it can actually dictate how, correct me if I'm wrong or correct me if I'm overthinking this, it can actually like give a say on how the overall society will grow in the future. I mean, should society be centralized? Should society be decentralized? And how should society deal with conflicts, with forming a consensus, given differing views, differing votes, different amounts of votes, for example? So speaking about this, what do you think the direction should Hive take? Should Hive continue this current very decentralized status? Or do you have any other perspectives in mind? Or basically, what do you see for Hive in the near future or in the far future?
Very good question. So I think the path is clear in that sense that Hive is supposed to be decentralized. And that is also one of the key values that Hive has. So because it is decentralized and you can't buy that. Solana can't buy that. They're VC funded and they're centralized to the core. Bitcoin is decentralized, but you also can't buy that because Bitcoin was founded at a time where nobody knew what crypto or stuff like that is. And one direction I would like to see Hive more, and that's of course just a single opinion, and that's where like the family aspects go. Some have a different opinion, I have this opinion, but on a technical level, I would like to see more interoperability between Hive and EVM, because I believe that similar like in programming, how JavaScript is the go-to coding language for people, Python, JavaScript, EVM is like the interoperability layer for blockchains. So while Hive has this very, very strong decentralized core that you can't buy, that is so super important for the future, it is like its own silo with its own development tools, which is great because it offers me a lot of freedom to code however I want. but it would be great to tap into the EVM stuff. So in 2020, before BC launched, I knew that EVM was the right route. And it's not easy, but I think that would be one way I would like to see Hive develop.
It's actually nice to see that. I mean, the blockchains can cooperate, not maybe in a full communication, but maybe like the development of these tools, basically interoperability in general. But how do you see like the community of Hive to be growing? I mean, it's not easy to get more people in the Hive blockchain or into blockchain in general, because there has to be like a certain principle or belief maybe in these people to like embrace the decentralization aspect or that concept. So how do you think should Hive grow? I mean, should it continue on spreading the value of decentralization? Should it work that way? Or what do you think?
That is a very good question, because that is also one topic where the opinions divide. For example, there are people, what I can understand, that are like, for example, we have this campaign where football teams in Venezuela are being supported, or I don't know if it's Venezuela, but there are like football teams in Latin America who are being supported with trickers, or there are wells with water are being built in Africa, and they're being sponsored by Hive. So that's one way to do it. Now, I'm a developer, and I've got, of course, maybe a different set of ideas, because what I would like to see is, one, of course, the focus on the core group, and two, I believe that app developers and games and apps, they're the ones who can bring in people who don't even need to realize that they're on Hive. They just realize, I can open packs, and I'm not being scammed by people who are rigging it. I can own my assets. And once people realize, I'm on a blockchain, it can grow. But I don't think it need to grow. Like, we don't need meme coins to be able to grow. We just need to make sure that we are growing in a very healthy way, and to make sure that our foundation is strong. We are not being corrupted by greed or something. We just want to build something, and we want to onboard people. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice to hear. And as an outsider, I mean, I'm not really like a user. I use some Hive dApps recently, but I mean, I'm not like a part so far of the community. But like, with this point of view, I actually think that for people to really embrace the blockchain, to really embrace this concept, I think that the one that we talked about earlier, I mean, if, for example, in gaming, if the players, if the users, if the gamers do actually have a say on how the game will be developed and how the game will be shaped, I think that's a very, very huge, I mean, point of, or first step for people to embrace Web3 and possibly the Hive blockchain. So I guess that's really the decentralization part here, especially in terms of governance. When people feel that what they say, or when people get to feel that they shape the community, that they get to shape like these certain projects, and the developers and the creators do react accordingly on how the community says, I think that's what can make the community larger. So yeah, thank you very much, Wolf, for sharing your thoughts and for sharing actually your story on Hive and for sharing the projects that you've been building. It's very nice to hear all of this. If our listeners want to know more about you, you actually have very nice thoughts, and it's actually very nice to hear this. Maybe you can invite them to follow you on your social media channels, even though you're not that much of a social media person. Yeah. But yeah, yeah. Maybe you can invite them to check more about what you do. So maybe you can lead them to some platforms, or basically tell them how they can know about you or the projects that you're developing.
Yeah, of course. So my Twitter handle is NFTmo. So NFT and Emo, NFTmo. The website for Splinter Royale is splinterroyale.com. And my Twitter handle is, my Hive handle is The Real Wolf. So you can go to Peaked or peaked.com at The Real Wolf. Yeah. And thank you for inviting me. I think it was the first interview I have done, but I'm more of a like behind the scenes guy, but I enjoy the spotlight sometimes. So thank you very much.
Yeah, and thank you also for being in this podcast. I mean, I also appreciate Chris Rice for inviting you guys. And actually, it's very nice to hear these thoughts of developers, of, I mean, not just of the business people or of the people in front of like these founders, these creators, but also like those real true developers working behind. So thank you for sharing your thoughts and thank you for sharing your perspectives on Hive and on Web3 in general. Thank you, Wolf.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to our 38 patrons. This episode is super powered by AskLex PH Academy, our official e-learning partner. Get certifications on Lean Six Sigma, project management, data science, and many more. Juan CFO, CFO services, bookkeeping and tax, and payroll processing for startups and small businesses. Tuala, the next evolution of digital trust, privacy-focused digital experience for sharing identity information across Web2 and Web3 ecosystems. And Space Cebu, the biggest branch in the Philippines, global co-working space, meeting rooms, and private offices for startups, digital nomads, and freelancers. UBI Philippines, advocating universal basic income for Filipinos. Ignite Careers, career matching platform for Filipino talents and hiring companies in the outsourcing industry. MamiQ Super Pet App, the Philippines' first ever one-stop mobile app for pet products and services. Divico Technologies, IT solutions specializing in software development, blockchain smart contracts, digital wallets, and cybersecurity. DBuzz, Web3 microblogging app promoting freedom of speech and content ownership. Benjoy's Food Products, the home of premium bacon ends, Tapa, and Tocino. Looking for, buy and sell online with Sigurado Sellers. NutriCoach, the all-in-one productivity tool for dietitians and nutritionists. And Podify Team, podcast launch, production, editing, and management company helping increase podcasters' efficiency. This episode is powered by Contact RFID Business Cards, SiriusMD, Uplift Codecamp, Founders Launchpad, Pocketworks, Board Prep, Zales, and Pareto Consulting. Please support the podcast through the links in the description.